Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular, because we eat fiber, Tuesday stream.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. The stream isn't regular, but we are.
Mm.
And hopefully you are all too. Hello to all the tiny people inside the computer. I'm glad you didn't die while we were away.
Yes, no, that would be very disappointing.
Sometimes I look in there for you and I can't find you. But you always seem to come back.
Hello!
Hello! Jello, yes, yes. But today, we're talking about food. But more food in general. I don't know, we're kind of got a bit of a smorgasbord of food-relatedness.
An amuse-bouche.
An amuse-bouche. A charcuterie board of different not really topics, but we could talk about food, of the different aspects of food, because this is going to be less research heavy. We've done, well, we're going to learn a bit. We've done a bit in the past, but really, we both agreed on this because it's not just food; it's the power of food.
Mm.
It's how does food relate to bits and pieces like power. YouTube just pops up on the back end once you've been streaming for 2 minutes and says, this would be a great time for ads. No, this would not be a great time for ads.
Well, it's
ads.
Not a great time for ads, but it's a great time to remind people, yes, that if you like what we do, whether it's this or it's stuff on the Substack or it's silly things we post on Twitter, or you like the books or possibly might be interested in maybe a future book, you have a number of ways you can choose to support us, which are in the description and the chat. Be that directly on.
Oh, the baby beans. The baby beans are above it.
You can buy a book from the Weflings people, who also have a great collection of other books that are also available.
Other books are also available.
Yes. You can give us super chats and stuff on here and be a member of the channel or subscribe to the Substack. There are lots of different options.
Yes, I've pinned it there. But we are still fully monetized on the YouTubes somehow. So there, you all know it. There's many ways to support us. Do help us out if you like our stuff.
I think someone should be extremely helpful and experiment with every single format of the anti-politics book and tell us which one tastes best. But please, yes, buy yourself a new copy when you do that. We'll don't waste do that, the one that you already have.
Yes. We've done a little bit about food in the past, but as more of a general introduction, what we're talking about is... The food is pretty much overlooked these days. It's fallen into the background as food and the power of food and the meaning that it used to have and the things it used to represent. In modernity, food is very different. Its power really has been taken away from it.
Mm.
And many of us seem to be almost bereft of food. People eat, but it does not satisfy them.
No, and it's... I think we would do a lot more to appreciate the aspects, particularly in community, sort of domestic situation, and in your sort of wider sort of environment, as to how food is sourced, how it's distributed, how you present it, how you consume it. Is there a purpose to consuming it beyond just eating?
Yes, is there a different aspects of food but the physical? But first, I don't know. We'll talk about community aspects of food. We've talked about the food security stuff we've done before in a sec, but we're going to quick here. Just says that supermarkets remove community purview over food. Food is now abstracted as they have little to say in distribution and quality. I think we're a little bit out of order there, but we can talk about this really in kind of any order.
It's just that if you think about it in regards to how food, even in industrial period or the early industrial period and prior to that, was sourced, how it was distributed, how it was fundamentally integrated with a large number of people's labour compared to nowadays. Whereas we have these things called supermarkets, and they're low trust, they're low cooperation. Your community doesn't starve because it's full of people who aren't willing to shift their own weight anymore, because the entire process of gaining sort of local food security has been totally abstracted.
Yes.
And now you have these sort of massive food warehouses, which are really in effect an arm of the government to solve the problem of food distribution at scale, but has done so in a manner that makes it totally soulless.
We've talked about food security in the past. I flashed that up before, but our food security stream from a couple of years ago is quite good about this. We do mention some of the supply chains and the fact that towns used to be self-sufficient, and it used to be essential for towns to be self-sufficient, because if you didn't do that and you lashed them all together, then all the towns starve rather than just some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that has been really, really forgotten in our current political situation, but just in the sense of food in general, in that food is now abstracted, and that is a big problem we've talked about. We won't be talking purely about food security, because we'd be here for far too long. You know, this is a full hour and 10-minute stream from a couple of years ago we did. And we have talked around the food subject a couple of times. We'll get to the other one we got to do when we get to kind of a more ingredients and slopification bit, because we have done stuff about that before. But in terms of the abstraction of food, it is what you've put as well, and it's the atomization of food too. But we're jumping around a little bit. It is now difficult. It's difficult for communities to control their own food. It's difficult for communities to understand the quality of their food, where their food comes from. And these are almost cliches now in the modern world. We've all of this is talked to death, and was talked to death when the supermarkets were introduced. But no one's ever reckoned with it.
No, and I think not enough time is put aside to genuinely consider, is there even the likelihood of an alternative to this? Because the answer probably is immediately no. We are sort of now beholden to this system of mass food distribution that is supposed to be risk adverse, but really all it will take is one big event, and as you say, we don't become one or two small communities that suffer while the rest are benefiting. We just all suffer because, like, Tesco goes out of business for good and all the food goes rotten.
Well, this is called the power of food. And I know God, we were talking to one of our friends about almost like syndicalism style stuff. And I think one of the misplaced impulses of the left is the idea that you have to set up a further abstract system to rebuild these communities.
Mm.
When really what they're lamenting is the loss of control communities and towns and wider communities had over not only the food distribution within their area, but where the food that they grow goes outside of their area.
Yes.
The power over food has been completely removed from the communities, not even just from the people who grow it, but also from the community leaders who represent them in an immediate sense. As in, if you're a town that grows food and the government comes to you and says, we are taking all of your food, that used to be the sign of a tyrant. But now that is the system that functions as intended. Your food is taken away from you all of the time, and then it is given back to you in a metered amount, which in the past would have been intolerable.
Yes. I was going to say, I think there is almost, because of the illusion of immediate abundance, because food is so convenient, that then the decisions for how it's distributed at a national level are probably not taken as seriously as how it was distributed at a much more local level centuries ago. That was a much more consequential decision for someone who was a lot more competent to be making than some guy that's been elected who used to be an ice cream van driver and then did some stuff on the council for a bit. And now for some reason he's a cabinet minister, food czar individual, who's supposed to somehow be responsible for all of us not starving to death.
Thank you for the $2, the lamented guide. It's all overcooked. The other aspect as well is that communities used to control who they sold to. In a more immediate sense, I mean, not just in a bulk sense, but in an ad hoc sense. As we've talked about a lot in different bits and pieces, but the advent of the civil rights era and civil rights law and race law in Britain has meant that towns no longer can decide that they don't want to serve food to certain groups, which used to be, you know, if you had a bunch of people who showed up, mostly gypsies in the old days, really, who rocked up and caused trouble, the local businesses would go, right, you move on, we're not serving you any more food. You can't eat here unless you grow it or gather it. And if you start stealing it, that's going to get even worse. And that used to be one of the levers that a community could pull. If you didn't feel like feeding somebody who you felt was destroying your community, you didn't have to. Now you do.
Yes, and I think as well as an avenue to go down here, talk about, and a dynamic that I think is quite interesting that we probably actually spend a lot more time picking apart just generally between all of us that look at this sort of stuff through any sort of lens, it's interesting that as food has become more abundant, as it has become more available, as choice has in some sense accelerated in a way that it was not there before, we now have food as a much more functional. It's performance, and it's mechanical, and it's about base nutrition. The notion of food as a fundamentally sort of communal affair that every aspect of it, an endeavour to sort of produce, prepare, and then consume it itself. Food in and of itself was an event rather than just being a thing you have at events.
Yes, it was. As you said there, so I'm just going to get some good stuff because we've not quite shown off the lower third quite yet, because you've got your little bib on there and we've got the stuff from the... And we've also... Well, before we got too far into it, we actually do have a sponsor today.
Oh, yes. Finally, our undying love for a very special group of people out in the Middle East has finally been answered. And we are now proud to present that this stream is brought to you by the one and only BB Beans.
BB Beans.
God's chosen legume.
Yes.
Thank you, Benjamin Netanyahu, for being ever so generous to us.
There you go. That's your joke for the day. I can't even pivot it, because you can just make the bit do a little wee.
Don't make it so tasty.
Do eat some beans. Hey, right. But as you were saying, yes, food in of itself used to be an event rather than being something that is attached just to events.
Yes. And I think there is an irony in the... Maybe not irony is the right word, but I find it interesting in that within situations whereby food becomes more inconvenient, the likelihood that you have it with other people is actually higher.
Yes.
That BB Beans, the results are explosive. But not necessarily that you were obligated, but because your choice was so limited, it becomes a communal affair. It becomes an effort amongst a whole group of people to actually make sure that there is one, sustenance, and two, that there is a space to consume it, and that space is, you know, possibly even in a further back time, sort of sanctified in a way that you can consume food there.
There is, well, we'll be getting to the, we're not quite there yet, but we're getting into the more, I guess, abstract areas of food and discussing that. But you're right in that food has become this bizarre thing that you do alone. People eat alone, people cook alone, people performatively cook alone, whereas food production, food preparation, and food consumption in previous times was all communal.
Mm.
And now that we live in this awful, miserable, atomized society, we realize why. We realize that actually the convenience of it isn't convenient. The fact you don't have to go out there with your family and barter for a lamb and know how to butcher it and know how to preserve it. You don't gain those skills. You have ready meal in the dark at home, I don't want to quite get into that stuff yet. I want to talk more about just the abstract. I guess the abstract loneliness of modern food. But I guess the abstract loneliness of modern food is best demonstrated by meal prep culture.
And I genuinely mean this when I say
this. The tower of plastic tubs.
Meal prep, I believe, to be the sign of a dying society. That we have turned the process of food... Now, I wholeheartedly understand that this is a consequence for many people of an economic factor.
Yes, it is.
And there will be people who listen to this stream, either now live or after the fact, who probably do live a life of eating a lot of the same food on a very much set frequency because it's what makes it financially viable to you. This is exactly what we're getting at in some regard. Is it because you have to have your seven tubes or your tubs of like tuna, pasta, melt, whatever, so you can have it on the London Underground and it's convenient to eat, and then have the same chili or mince-based meal 6-7 nights a week as your evening meal because you've cooked it all at once and you're consuming it yourself in front of your iPhone, you know, in the dark in your little flat share.
There's something singularly sad to me, especially, you know, I used to make big stews and things, but there's a bit less sad feeling about putting aside, you know, a giant tub of stew that you're going to use later I'd use it at a different time, then these individual, these single serving, you know, self-made ready meals. You won't eat the ready meals at the store are too expensive and unhealthy, but you're creating the simulacrum. You're creating your own ready meals.
Yes, and instead of you having more organic, fresh foods in your immediate proximity, which you go and access once a day, once every 2 days, at which point you could argue you're still prepping things, yeah. But what you're really doing is rolling over leftover ingredients into some sort of perpetual stew, or you know, yesterday's bones left are today's soup base.
Yes.
I think that's very consciously different from the very purely mechanical and technical procedure of, if I air fryer X amount of these chicken wings every day for once a week, then that's me going to have my portion of sustenance.
Yes.
The whole other aspect that we're talking about here of the communal production and yet also consumption of the food is completely and utterly disregarded. And I think as much as people like to point at sort of social mores or, you know, pieces of media as things that people from the old world would balk at, I think the idea of so many people living in single domiciles, consuming single meals on their own 7 days a week would absolutely shock and appall someone from a couple hundred years
ago. Yes, it would be, this would be like, why do you people live like this?
Mm.
It actually is just it would be like you curling up in the corner and crying. It would be that dramatic because we used to communally create large amounts of food for large families. We used to create large amounts of a single meal together to consume together. Now people alone create large amounts of different meals for themselves to consume later. Mm. It is actually the opposite.
Yes.
They're not making lots of the same food to consume together now. They're making lots of different food for themselves to consume later, which is a bizarre nesting. It's antisocial. It's neurotic food.
We take so little satisfaction in the fact that we do not have to starve, that we see it as a chore. You know, it's almost as you put in the notes here that a certain subset of people regard the acquiring, preparation and consumption of food, that whole process, as a waste of time. Replace this with Soylent tube supplement, which is what your Huel and all that kind of crap, I suppose, is at the end of the day. I can't actually put myself in the mindset of someone who would do that. I could see myself believing in communism or climate change before I actually managed to get myself into the sort of behavioural pattern where, yes, I'm going to see the consumption of tasty meals in a community environment as somehow a disutility.
Or just I guess the whole process has been made so miserable and meaningless that it has no higher meaning to it. There is no ceremony for food. There is no, there's just no weight put on it. It used to be something that was almost from the sacred realm.
And you would think as well, again, with the surplus of food we have available, I know it's maybe not as cheap as it was 15, 20 years ago, and certain things like red meat and fresh chicken and whatever else are starting to become a bit of a pain to get a hold of in sufficient quality. But I think it goes to show the complete sort of failure of the sort of individualist and liberal worldview that if you give people free time, they will make use of it. You would think the average person has enough free time in their life to actually learn to cook.
Yes.
And to enjoy the process of cooking food and have that be an experience they share with other people and build social bonds over. And yet people look at that as if it's a chore. That to leisure is something that only a very subset of talented people who have the ability to utilise their free time can do. This is why, evidently, people would rather have Huel and super noodles and takeaway meals than they would concern themselves with the whole encompassing process.
Well, it's a sign that people don't value their own food, but it's also a sign that people don't value their own time. It's a combination of both. They don't value their time or their food enough to invest one in the other.
Well, that's why in
another in the one.
Yes, I was going to say that's why in the good old days someone valued your time for you.
Yes, yes, and in good old days.
Yes, it's meal prep as a sort of bizarre food mouse utopia, as I think what you were trying to get at.
Yes, yes, it was.
It is an utter and total symptom of social atomization. And I think, again, it's one of those things...
It's the lone obsessive self-grooming of food.
Yes, it's sort of, I almost feel like I'm doing like a weird Peter Hitchens thing here, where I'm taking something that no one actually cares to view and sort of have a complete irate dispute about it. But I see the same thing as well, like... There is a conversation about eating food in a nutritional fashion. And there is also a conversation about food then just becoming purely mechanical. And that you get folk that do the whole keto, you know, no carbs, no this, and then all they end up doing is eating the same crap day in, day out, and not really actually having the ability to enjoy it as something anymore.
For those talking about Deliveroo and stuff like that, we'll not be tackling that here. We did our culinary collapse stream where we go in on the Zog Chow, since apparently goi slop is now a completely mainstream term.
I think we need to actually come up with a term. Eros is a sort of an understanding of the metaphysics of sex, and it's a whole process, it's intimacy, it's all the other aspects on top of it. Not just the mechanical components of sort of reproduction, then we need a sort of a similarity or some sort of I've completely lost the train of thought. A sort of alternative way of describing food and our social interaction with food in the same way that Eros does.
Yes.
People have reduced food down to mere reproduction and might as well have the food equivalent of a ticket for an IVF clinic.
Yes, it is. It's the complete removal from the metaphysical or spiritual realm of food. When before food had sacraments and ceremony attached to it, the sacraments and ceremony being removed from food is what we kind of opened with a little bit as an opener, but it's something that is so ahistoric in our time that we do not interact with food in a spiritual and metaphysical way. That is completely alien to any other people in any other time. And it's the same with many other aspects of our lives that we don't have metaphysical or spiritual aspects to. But food is one of the big ones. And it is as you said, some people, it's been brought so low in that the power of food has been subsumed by the power of management and the modern state so heavily that people think of it as a waste of time. They have no, their passion for it in the age of plenty has been removed. You know, people eat, but they find no meaning in it.
Yes, and I think again that you know that sort of Marxist economic notion that if you remove the disutility of labor from people by creating abundance, you would then have all these people who could be potential artists on the street tomorrow, and there'd be a Mozart and a Shakespeare everywhere. Well, you would think with the abundance of food and the abundance of information out there about how to prepare and what to do with it, there would be a Gordon Ramsay and a Marco Pierre White on every corner.
Yeah, what? Why?
But there isn't.
Why does the plenty mean soy oil and palm oil? Why does plenty mean homogenized, injected nitrate chicken?
Lowest common denominator.
Yeah. Why does plenty mean bad? Why it is? It's the age of quantity, but. All of the, I feel like quoting the whole Bowden thing where he talks about printing geniuses.
That's what exactly what I was getting into.
There'd be a Strangburn on every street corner, you know, there'd be an intellectual Gentile here on every street corner. You can't do that with food. We've learned that the managerialists can't do that with children, as we talked in our pronatalism stream, you know. People have to hold their hands up and say, well, children come from God. Being the same way people have to hold up their hands and say, well, good food comes from God.
And I think as well, if we look at this almost from a further level than the meal prep thing, the prevalence of single occupation living has allowed all of this to sort of proliferate out. And every single part of this that was meaningful to people prior to isn't even seen or aware of or acted upon.
The aspect, the breaking of bread being not only part of the tradition of Christians, but the tradition of basically every social group ever. has been, you no longer break bread together. That is how bad things are. There is no breaking of bread here. Thank you for the £5 there, James Goodwin 3444. Beans, good for the heart. The more you learn, love the nation of Israel.
Yes, indeed.
And what we end up this situation whereby individuals who are under no social pressure, who are under no sort of like food selection pressure, end up looking at it through the lowest common denominator lens and turn something that could be, you know, a livelihood for some people, a way of demonstrating your appreciation for other people around you. But because we don't have households where people provide and other people produce within the household, you don't have this. Everyone's got to be their own provider, producer, preparation. They've got to do all of it. You know, it's created a sort of diseconomy of scale, whereby people are actually taking up more domestic tasks than they otherwise should because they've got to do it on their own behalf, cooking being a primary one of those.
Well, again, we've talked about the metaphysics of food preparation and consumption, but of food itself, of the idea of sacred foods or special foods or foods that are only eaten at certain times of year that have attachments to festivals. The disaggregation from the seasons and the cycles is also the same as the disaggregation from each other. And it's these things that have... You know, food used to be a thing of wonder. It used to be a thing of magic. It used to be a thing of community. It used to be a thing of meaning that was worth the time and effort. People would look at you funny if you said, oh, you're wasting time gathering, preparing, and eating all that food. Like, what do you mean? I'm wasting my time gathering, preparing, and eating food. That's to the man of the earth, to the literal people in contact with the soil. That's what life is.
And it's almost then no surprise that given the flattening of the sort of food hierarchy, that we now have these sort of top down anti-food solutions to providing people with sustenance. We have vegan crap and the meal prep stuff and your gusto this and...
Well, I just wanted to point... Someone sent me this, which is the report of the week's latest video, just entitled, Is There Anything That Isn't Getting Worse? I do just like how certain channels that actually have a bit of a penchant for, well, honesty, have just been sat there going... Why is everything getting... It's almost like an undercurrent. Review Bra has become the Spenglerian food reviewer. He has become the charter of the decline of the slop.
But no, I am not justifying this. I am not saying this is the correct thing to do. But I can totally understand why, as an elite, looking over a subset of people who have decided that, as you say, the... accumulation, preparation, and consumption of food is a waste of time, that no wonder then you would have to provide solutions for these people in a mass and immediate sense.
Well, we've learned both the limits and also undeniable nature of the fact that food preferences are set top down, but only within certain parameters. You can only really push people so far before their innate tastes take over, before they understand that you are selling them not food as food. There's great chapters in history of what are always portrayed as tyrants trying to convince people that what they are providing them is food when it isn't food. It's one of the greatest signs of both an evil but failing state is the fact that it must provide fake food. But it must pretend that it is providing food to people when what it's actually providing is a lie. It's the idea of being fed without being nourished. The idea of being, you know, given food that has no content.
And I think there is an important distinction to make here as well between some of this. We are not lamenting at specific techniques of preservation or preparation, or even of bulking food out with other ingredients.
No.
It's more what purpose does this serve?
Yes.
Is the individual in their household making a choice to bulk out meals because that's the only way to do it? That's very different from statewide policy declaring that X ingredient we have been used to being having unadulterated for centuries now has to have this extra element involved in it.
It is. It's the metaphysic. It's this food is anti-food because of it, what of it represents. The man in the 17th century who stretched out his beef stew with barley is not the same as the bureaucrat who decides that rubber minced with palm oil can now be sold as chicken. That those two have very different motivations behind them. And it's anti-food because it comes from this ethos of food as a waste of time. Food has no meaning. It has no character of its own. It's we joke about it, you know, the simulacrum and all this and what it means. But really, it is the fact that you have a class of people who completely disregard all of the sacred aspects of food, all of the fact that food is a recognizable kind of platonic form that we think of it. They do not, and I think in people's minds it insults their idea of food. It becomes an insult to the metaphysic of sustenance from a group of people who not only don't believe in it, believe that the practice of it is dangerous.
Yes,
they believe that completely utilitarian attitudes to food are disastrous.
And I think as well, you could create a sort of interesting view of the complete destruction of social bonds purely through the study of food from the period 1900 to 1950.
Yeah.
And that the radical social change taken on board by the elites in Britain so that we could engage in two world wars and sort of not starve meant a complete and utter revolution in how we access food, how we decide how we use it. And we still live under the consequences of that 80-odd years on.
It is just a point that really the people can detect the fake food, though. They spiritually feel it. I don't think really it's the flavour or the content or the politics around the kind of the fake food boom. I think really it was the spiritual approach to food it represented. I think people, even if they couldn't articulate it, viscerally rejected the idea that food doesn't mean anything. That it is, in the same way we reject the idea that we are interchangeable human units, that the Somali can step off the boat and be an Englishman interchangeably. We believe this about food, in that food is not created equal.
Yes, it's reducing the entirety of intimacy and human emotions in regarding love and whatever else down to the mechanical aspects of reproduction and nothing else. It's just such an awful thing to do. And it's, as you say, it's not necessarily that these things are unappealing. Many of them are, of course. But it's that more they strike in certain people, I think, an uncanny valley. It's
skinwalker food.
Yes, it's synthetic. This is actually something I was having a conversation with someone in the pub about the other day. I have a good friend of mine, a gentleman in his mid-60s, and he has been vegetarian, I think, since the late 70s. Funnily enough, when there was quite a bit of a boom of that at the time. Now, he's not one of these stupid people that's vegan that won't have butter and eggs and whatever else, but he tries to be, you know, somewhat careful with it. Fair enough. And we were having a chat with someone else about why is it that vegan foods, that food replacement products, have to ape other foods? Why does it have to be a plant burger? Why does it have to be a non-beef burger? Why can't it be something else? Because people aren't taking the time and effort to think about constructing as their own individual thing. They are in an abstracted and an aggregated policy solution.
It's a
shape of your favorite fast
food. A managerial abstracted solution to the fact that they no longer can provide you good beef. And it's failed. That's the interesting thing here is that people thought they were going to run with this. People, there'll be no meat in the future. There'll all be new, you know, meal replacements. Well, the meat's getting more expensive, but the meal replacements are languishing. What's happening is that our food isn't being substituted. It's just being taken. You can't fake meat. You can't fake sustenance. You can't fake plenty. And what this is really is fake plenty. And people have rejected the fake plenty, even when there's no real plenty. Because it just makes them sad. I think really it also just reminds them of what they don't have. But this was thrust heavily. Companies were paying supermarkets. The government was paying supermarkets. It was being absolutely shoved in everybody's faces. It was being saturated. We were being told this was the future. And it was completely rejected by the public. You cannot make people go against their innate will, their innate features. You can't, like I said, you can't turn the inclinations around. You can't make people who are antisocial and have no utility in cooperation.
You can take a horse to soybeans, but you can't make it eat.
Exactly. Well, to be fair, a horse would probably munch down certain types of soybeans. I mean, they're more appropriate for them than us.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
But it's the interchangeability that people don't. They it's sold to them as real, but they can feel that it's not.
Mm.
Food soul and all, and soul food, and people talk about food having, it's such a cliche in the modern terms, but really that's what people sensed. It was anti-food. It was an insult to what they consider cuisine.
And I think as well, there is always the worry of talking about this in a way where you sound like you're a bit kind of middle class wanky. Ooh, why can't people proper food with proper ingredients? There is, of course, the entire sort of structure of all of this now whereby that isn't viable to some people. I mean, I will put my hand up as someone who probably should have learned to cook a lot sooner than I did, but chose not to because at the end of the day, it was more financially stable to buy the same staple elements every week and not have to worry about burning something and not having food the next day.
Yes.
I can totally, as someone who's been in that position, I can totally appreciate that. But even then, what made that situation easier was I coordinated between myself and my flatmate at the time, and then we could actually cook proper food to try and make other things. Because even just by sharing it between two, it became a completely different procedure.
People will always want real food. People always want proper food. And people will always, as things get leaner and as things get more diluted, they will run for things that remind them of plenty and remind them of comfort and remind them of the meaning of food, which is partly why beef has become so expensive, in that not only has plant-based food become fashionable, beef has become fashionable.
Mm.
It is slightly become a luxury item, that's partially why, but really I think quite honestly the campaigns against it just made people miss it. It made people hang on to it tighter. It made people think, oh my goodness, they actually are coming for the food.
Mm.
And food panics runs on food. Food purity panics are one of the most recurring aspects of what power has to deal with.
Yes, I think fundamentally, if you want to get into the conversation of what makes the people so agitated that they choose to either disengage or possibly even engage in some level of insurgent behaviour against the current regime, food quality and availability comes a lot higher up that sort of priority than things like social policy.
Yes.
Or woke media, or possibly even some regards demographic issues.
If you were to explain to people exactly what the food industry had done to their food since 1900, you would get much more radical responses from people than you would about most other ideas. I think if you were to feed the UK population a steady diet of, you know, what food used to mean, what food used to cost, and what food means now and what food costs now, you would get people who genuinely felt violent because of what had been done. But it's not sort of a process that can be real to people. You know, ham went from being something on the bone you salted for weeks and, you know, had to re-soak and do stuff.
To being farty, watery, reconstituted stuff you buy in a packet that's dead into it.
Or even something you buy in a can that's preformed. Something that you buy that is completely artificial. You're buying mechanically reclaimed meat, and then the bureaucrat above you is going, oh, well, your food's got cheaper. And I think that process has gone on for so long and become so extreme that, like, metaphysically people are reacting. It's not middle class. It's not. It has outlets like that, the farm shop and all that. Mm. But really the instinct that's based on is that people are depressed by what they are served. The rations, the slop in the trough is not what it used to be. And I think people really, really, really do sense that in our current time.
And I think as you've got in the notes here, but it's actually a little demonstration of the limits of managerialism.
Yes.
It's something that they can't contend with because the fact that I choose to maybe go to the butchers and pay upwards of 30 or 40% more for a meat product than I would get from Aldi or somewhere equivalent doesn't factor into their economic calculation.
No.
It doesn't factor into a spreadsheet. that motivation goes above and beyond the sort of level of analysis they see the world through. And therefore, it's a problem they can't solve for you. So they just continue to do these weird nudge units things. And that's, I think, why it always seems so alien. Everyone always asks the questions, well, this stuff's unpopular, why do they push it? It's like, well, because they've not really got an option otherwise. And maybe in a weird way, they probably see doing that as the only thing they can do, because otherwise they might look cold and uncaring.
Well, getting back to the supermarket, that's a paradigm that's existed for a very long time now. Most people who are alive now, especially in America, will have almost exclusively bought their food in a supermarket. If you're under the age of 50, you don't really remember time before the supermarkets. And yet, I think our disquiet about them is as high as ever. The supermarkets have never been liked.
Well, see,
they've always been tolerated.
I find the experience I have quite different now, because where we are, fair enough, there are supermarkets in our surrounding area, and technically the one we use primarily is a smaller branch of one, but it has limited choice.
Yeah.
It has limited stock and limited foot space, or sort of square footage. It can't be that your massive Tesco's, your massive Asda's, which when I grew up in Glasgow, and given the bits of that I grew up in, and how very much it was all a new town, there was no thought about the pre-existing networks of how food was distributed in those places. What you got was everyone went to Tesco or Asda on a Sunday, spent £100-odd on stuff they didn't really need or want, and then proceeded to pretend that that was okay way of going about it.
Well, we've almost learnt the folly, the trick of Yeltsin in the grocery store. In that what Yeltsin in the grocery store is actually sees is a monument to capitalist waste. If anything is a monument to what everyone thinks is wrong with capitalism, it is the supermarket. It is an abstract creation of the managerial state to create a hodgepodge warehouse situation where you having good, real food from your community is substituted for the fact you have 15 different types of canned product.
Mm.
And that, I think, that's, again, the sense of sadness that creates in many people, I don't think has ever been fully articulated. As well as the myth of plenty, as in the consumer choice, the idea that the shops are full of food, in quotes, that doesn't mean your community is doing very well.
Yes,
that doesn't mean
exactly.
Your community is thriving.
These things are no longer correlated.
Yeah, the shop can be full of food, and yet everything around it can be dead. The community is disaggregated from itself, and so the quality of food in the shops and the quantity of food in the shops really isn't an indicator sometimes of what an area is like. You can have sometimes bespoke-looking grocers that have found themselves in an area of London that has drifted past a certain line, and you have absolute hellholes with whatever little shop is trying to survive within them. But it's this abstraction that the place that is, it is not of it. Things used to be of a place, of a time, of a season. And I think that the ultra-abstraction of food, we've gone through all of the supermarket and the use of power and the power that food used to have, I think the entire process of it and the entire kind of metaphysic framework of current food is what's led to people's destructive relationship with it. People do not understand food. Mm. They actually don't, not in just the cooking it sense, but they don't understand it in the Platonic forms sense. They don't understand food as an entire subject, and it is a very large subject.
I bet you who does understand food, though.
Who?
Chat. Let's see if chat. Would you like to play a little game? Slop or no?
Slop or not slop? We're playing slop or not slop now, guys. I've got a few things lined up.
Well, also, because there's that like one person in the chat that always asks. The weather is very rainy. It was very warm last week, and I got really sunburnt, but
yes,
it was worth it, and now it's raining.
We've got a few bits, but you guys just put some foods in the chat, because I got a few things here, but we've not got too many, and I can quickly search some up while we're going. But I don't know, let's start completely randomly. Oh, God, that's a huge image. Fucking what?
So we're doing it live.
Massive Nando's. Where do we think Nando's goes? I think Nando's is definitely on one side, but especially these days. But you see, Nando's used to straddle the line because they did used to just be like, oh, it's a chicken breast sandwich. What are you going to do?
Do we leave that as a line straddle?
No. These days, I think...
A lot of chat saying slot.
I think these days that is firm. And then, I mean, the cheeky Nando's era ruined it. But
yeah, no, you're right.
I'm told from even former Nando's enthusiasts, the Nando's has gone to definitely...
Is someone slop. In chat, is stew slop? Absolutely not.
No, stew is not slop.
Especially if you make it with the right texture.
We had a turkey. I'll find a turkey Twizzlers image there at some point. But
steak and kidney pie?
God, it's a fake PNG. That's funny. Steak and kidney pie. Yeah. Steak pies. I think this is a definitely an example. I don't know. Steak pies aren't slop. Depends on the steak pie.
Would say as long as it's not one of those ones with too much of the tripe and jelly, it's not slop.
You can have bad steak pies. You know, yeah, like, it's not slop, but sometimes it can be. I'll put it over here because there is a spate of bad steak pies. But I think it does firmly belong. Even a bad one does belong in the not slop space, right? I don't know. This might be a controversial one, but what are your thoughts on sushi? Slop or not slop?
I think culturally, for me. I think slop, because it's too...
Yeah.
It's got part of, like, the individualized thing to it. It's not just that it's alien to me because it's different ingredients. It's alien to me because it's food in a different sort of cultural, social package that I am not accustomed to. That is not to say that one man's slop is maybe not another man's cuisine. This is very feasible.
God, I can tell you, I'll actually just get I'll get that one. But what's
chat saying about sushi?
Well,
are y'all being disgusting weeaboos and apologising for? Like,
a lot of people saying slop, not sloppy, but I won't eat it. Slop.
Foreign muck.
My problem is that
it's too millennial. Yes, it's very food compartmentalised.
I'll put it over here because it can. The thing is, sushi can be good, but most, especially in the West, sushi slop. Well, I'm not Japanese. I'm afraid that all non-Japanese homemade sushi is commercial food slop. And it has become even more slopified in the intervening years. But here's a chat suggestion.
Slop.
Turkey Twizzlers.
Reconstituted meat, slop.
I know. But people asked for them. So
this one might be controversial, but I'm going to reckon, can we go for the bucket that you've got there? And I think if we disaggregate the KFC brand,
yeah,
which I know we didn't do for Nando's, but fried chicken in and of itself as aping back to some classic British food.
I would actually say that KFC sometimes... The actual fried chicken pieces themselves, not so bad. The slop around it, but controversially, I'm considering...
I'm surprised so many people... Maybe this is an American thing or something, but... I will admit.
To be fair, ours got like basically told it wasn't good enough a few years ago and has deliberately tried to be a good KFC.
Maybe this is why. Well, no, I did homemade fried chicken isn't slop. Well, of course that isn't.
Yes, yes.
But I must admit, we do it on the very odd occasion and we go for the big ones and that always tends to be pretty good. I don't think we've ever had one of those where we've had the chicken and thought, eh, we could do better than this.
The kernel doesn't make a terrible product. I will defend slightly. It would be much better if it was beef dripping, but it's slopified non-slop. I'll put it just about on the line there. But I don't know. It's KFC is a very variable one though. If you get a good KFC, it's pretty good.
Worry you not, people in chat, we do actually make our own fried chicken as well sometimes.
I just wanted to get this one out because people kept talking about Ethiopian food years ago and this just looks terrible. It actually is just like, here's your slop on a slop rag.
Oh, it's on a rag. It's not a rag.
It's like a soft bread. It's like a big chapati. You see, in the realm...
That's even sloppier than the sushi.
What's sloppier than slop? I'm putting the Nando's on par with the Turkey Twizzlers, but that's going over there. You know, I'm readjusting the scale here. And there we go. Oh, we've not got too much not slop here, actually. I could have got more in. I don't know, a burrito. What do we think of? I think this kicked off the entire debate, didn't it? About slop at one point, did a burrito. So I remember AA had his slop arc like 3 years ago when he got into it about Mexican food.
Mm.
Slop not appealing. Slop not slop. Again, I'm not sure if a burrito is inherently slop, but I mean,
do we say that the sort of commercialized foreign flatbread product goes in slop, but the equivalent sort of European pastry and or calzone or something like that is not slop?
Tell you what, actually, let's do that. Let's get that out there. Good calzone.
As little trousers go, these ones are terrible.
It's just little trousers. Yeah, no, because it means little trousers, doesn't it? Oh, there we go. Right. What do we think?
Calzone's got to be a not slop.
It's the one that won't work for some reason. Ah, stupid Google images.
We'll do a couple more of these, and then we'll,
yeah, yeah, we will. I'm just trying to make sure we've got some actual. It's not working. Anyway, calzones. Whilst I can see if I can find an actual picture that will fucking work, so everything's a web.
No, that's all right. I think people can picture a calzone in their own mind, I believe.
But we've got to put it somewhere.
Oh, okay.
No. Like picture a calzone of the mind.
Can you turn it around 360 degrees in your head?
Shape rotates the calzone.
Calzone rotator.
It's decided we can't do the whole drag onto the screen thing anymore.
Got too many there or something. It's just not liking it.
I don't think so. I just think it's being awkward with me. But that's very annoying. You know what? That is annoying.
I'm sorry, chat, but the slot board
The slot board broke, guys. I'm sorry. Okay. Everything off. The slot board broke.
Shall we have a last double check of the chats and whatnot before we go?
Well, we're not going to be going yet. We've still got a little bit more to do here.
Oh no.
I was going to say a bit more discussion here about
people calling slop and what are they not? What are their own suggestions?
Yes. What are your suggestions for not slop or slop? Because that was a bit annoying there. I was hoping to be able to keep dragging those on, but we'll do some more of that. We'll periodically, like every 6 months or a year, maybe do a food stream. Because it's a good subject. I just like talking about food. It's a good one to do. Oh, that's it. Behind that, moving around a burrito.
Yeah, anglicised curry is nice. I'll fight this one. Well, I was going to say that point actually. That obviously, sort of Indian like street merchant food is very clearly slop. But yes.
It depends.
A properly made curry, or as we just used to call them, stews.
Yes, a properly made spiced chicken stew with coconut in it, aka a curry. a lot of the variants you can have good curry. You see, a lot of forms of food can be not slop, but the overwhelming form of them is slop.
Yes, like some of the Greggs. A lot of Greggs is now slop.
Yes,
but the sort of steak bake or pasta you get from a more independent baker's is not slop.
You see, we never consider things like seafood slop, but I suppose there is like certain forms of. People don't really eat like crab sticks anymore, do they really? That's kind of a moot point. Or maybe like really awful cheap like fish cakes and fish fingers. But somebody talking about Bernard Matthews and Bird's Eye Mums.
Yeah.
We don't know about Bird's Eye Mum. It's a thing to finish on, actually. That is something that we've had a lot of in the past few years, is this weird societal like. Not panics, these top-down panics, like the sugar tax, the advertising bans, the therapeutizing of food. As the slop has become slop, we've had some sort of mitigating token actions to try and make sure that people aren't suffering too much from the slop. To the point that we now have those awful diet jabs, which people are going to be sued for forever when it turns out it gives you like awful endocrine disorders or like makes your villi rot off. God knows what long-term implications of those things are. Don't get the jags, folks. Put the fork down.
uh, fish and chips, if it's done in beef dripping, is not slop. If it's done in gutter oil and it's served to you by some foreign individual that can't tell what crispy batter is, then it is slop.
It does.
If the chips are blonde and hard or completely brown and overdone, then it's slop.
If a jolly woman in a butcher's apron hands it to you, it's probably not slop.
No.
If Turkish hands have touched it, it is almost definitely. I'm afraid that Browns just can't really do fish and chips. It just doesn't work. But what you've got here, actually, before we go, is actually a little quote about food from Carlisle.
Yes.
Because you went to find the Carlisle quote.
I just wanted to have something to end on. Right. Dinners are defined as the ultimate act of communion. Men that can have communion and nothing else can sympathetically eat together. And they can still rise into some glow of brotherhood over food and wine.
Oh, isn't that lovely? Thank you to everybody who came to our stream today. A little bit of a shorter one, but we just wanted to talk about food.
Yeah, I mean, there's really, like, bugger all else to talk about. We could be sitting here going, ooh, my politics. And to be honest, that would just be boring.
That's stupid and also gay.
And it's not tasty either.
It's not tasty. It's not fun. Just not very good.
One last chat we've missed from Yes, I heard the BB beans give you gas, but that's a lie. 6 million calories all in one tin? I don't know, bro.
I heard there was the awful Zyklon farts lawsuit. But
yeah, this is now a food channel. Politicoids keep moving.
Politicoids keep moving. This is a delicious food channel.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, yum. Anyway, I put the old B&O Cruises on there because, boy, have the boomers probably spent all your inheritance on some sort of charcuterie board scam. But anyway.
It's NFT, but it's cured meats.
You guys have a good one. We'll talk to you again.
And make sure I have some proper dinner this week.
Yes. Bye.